Skylar Hughes from Vogel Zeng Law. Skylar, welcome to WGN. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Your first time here on WGN. Are you nervous? Or are you feeling good?
Feeling good.
Oh, that's great. All right. I was hoping a little nervous, Skylar, but no, he's a professional. You've been at Vogel Zeng Law for how many years?
About 2 years now.
2 years.
Well, 2 years as an attorney, but I was a clerk there before that as well.
Do you enjoy the work that you all do at Vogel Zeng?
Yes, absolutely. We get to work with a lot of great people, a lot of great families, as they're going through a lot of tough times.
Yeah, some of the toughest times of their life. If you don't know Vogel Zeng, although if you're a frequent listener to this program and the station, you know Vogel Zeng, and you've probably seen the commercials here in Chicagoland for a long time. They handle asbestos-related cases or asbestosis or lung cancer-related cases. But basically, after being exposed to asbestos, then the latency period is long and long. And Skylar, I think every guest I talk to from Vogel Zeng, I'm always still surprised that asbestos, which we've known about as a bad thing for a long time, I mean, we're going to be dealing with these cases for a while because it hadn't been outlawed in some areas until fairly recently, right?
Right. It was still in use for a long time, and we do have a often 30 to 50 year latency between the exposure and people getting the disease, whether that be lung cancer, whether that be mesothelioma or asbestosis. And so with that latency period, we're working with people who were exposed back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, even the 90s, and then they're getting sick today.
Yeah, and at that point, the 60s, companies knew or should have known the dangers of asbestos, and that's really where the litigation comes in, right?
Exactly. The information about the dangers go back to the 1930s, and we're really very well established by the 1960s. So these companies really had no excuse for the lack of care that they took in protecting the people that were working with asbestos-containing products from those dangers.
312-981-7200 is our phone number. Every time we have someone from Vogel Zeng Law on, we get calls from people who maybe didn't even think that perhaps the death of their loved one, especially if it's like a lung cancer case, may have been related to Vogel Zeng, or excuse me, not Vogel Zeng, you can call Vogel Zeng, to asbestos. Or we'll get calls from people that maybe just got went to the doctor's office and they had like plaque or something on their lungs that they realize, oh, I had been working with asbestos, and they call on in and they chat with Vogel Zeng. So I'm just teeing that up for people. 312-981-7200. As we continue our conversation with Skylar, he's comfortable taking text and calls as well. So please give us a ring. But before we dive in deeper, Skylar, I want to get to know you a little bit. You shocked me when you said where you're from. Where are you from originally?
I'm from Washington, D.C.
The reason why that shocks me is I worked out there for a while, and I maybe met one person that was actually from the area. It's a town of transplants, but you grew up there, right?
Yep, that's right. I was born and raised there, right in the city.
Right in the city of D.C., and your family had connections to the area as well. Did you like growing up in D.C.? Were you immediately involved in the world of politics and law as a kid?
I mean, I loved growing up there. It's a great city to grow up in, like Chicago. It's got great transit, so I was able to really get around the city on my own and be independent early on, and it's just great place to live. In terms of politics, I was definitely interested in it from a young age.
Uh-huh.
When I went off to school, I did, of course, go into political science. I didn't.
Yes. Is that a requirement for anyone who grew up in D.C.? You have to go into poli-sci or pre-law or something?
You might think. I didn't actually know that I wanted to go to law school yet or go into law. Thought I'd be going and running off campaigns, but I quickly figured out after college that maybe actually wasn't quite for me.
I tell you what, having done that, I think you made the right decision. It is a grind working in politics, whether you're working with a politician or the campaigning of it or with all other aspects of it. So you didn't know whether you wanted to go to law school. You were more interested in the political side. What eventually tipped you over to saying, hey, because you got your undergrad at Notre Dame, and what eventually tipped you over to say, "Hey, I want to go to law school. I want to expand this and be a lawyer."
Yeah, I worked for a few years out of undergrad at Notre Dame. I moved to Houston, which is where my now wife is from. Mm-hmm. We met in college, and I worked at a nonprofit, did some disaster recovery work from Hurricane Harvey.
Oh wow!
And
what is it? What do you mean? What did that work look like?
Sure. So for that, I was a case manager. So even some similarities with being a lawyer sometimes, you're working with people who have had something upended their life, in that case, a hurricane, often, you know, destroyed their homes, destroyed all their personal property inside, might have destroyed their cars that they need to get around, especially in Houston. And you're helping them put their life back together so they can get back on their feet, you know, have a bed to sleep on, be able to move back into their home, move back into a new apartment, and get their life back on track.
Hurricane Harvey, for those that maybe don't remember the specific details, that was the one that essentially parked itself on Houston mm-hmm. for days and flooded. It was more the flood than the wind damage, right? When we think of hurricanes, we think of palm trees blowing over. No, this was a major water event, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you had over 50 inches of rain falling on places.
50?
Yeah. Yeah. It, absolutely insane amounts of water, huge amounts of flooding, and a huge geographic area just all over the city and the surrounding area. I would just drive all over to people whose homes have been flooded during this event.
Whose lives have been wrecked, essentially.
Yeah.
You helped kind of make them whole.
Yeah, exactly. Helped connect them to, you know, housing resources, furniture replacement, and other assistance.
Do you carry that, like, fight for the underdog in your work today?
Oh, I would definitely say so. You know, I think one thing that you get from that is just the sense of working with those individuals and how much of an impact you can really make on their lives. And, you know, at that time, and of course, this is a little pre-inflation, but even having $2,000 of assistance to be able to get furniture for somebody could make all the difference for them.
Or just to have know that someone's fighting for them, right?
Yeah.
I think even if you can't make them completely whole, you can't bring them back to the life they may have had financially or the setup that they had before the hurricane. Just, I think you can empower people by showing them that someone is there to maybe help lift them up.
Exactly. Exactly. That can make the biggest difference in the world, just having somebody on your team.
I think that I can draw a direct line to what you do now to that. The idea at Vogelzang, especially for mesothelioma, it's a fatal disease. We know that. And you can't make people whole again after they lose someone or are on the verge of losing someone. But if they have someone fighting for them, fighting the just cause, you can make their lives better and keep their legacy intact and help their legacy help the next generation. I think there's a direct line to those two things, don't you?
Oh, I absolutely do. I absolutely do. And, you know, I think that's one thing that just drew me to plaintiff's work in general and specifically to this work with the asbestos litigation is being able to help those individuals fighting for their to be on their side and help them put back their lives together.
How did you end up coming to Chicago then? You, your wife from Houston, you're from D.C. Why'd you end up here?
Well, I did end up going to law school here. I went to Loyola University Chicago School of Law.
Nice.
They really have a great program there for, you know, at the time I was already working. I didn't really want to be going back to school and taking out massive loans and mm-hmm. not be working during that period. I was actually still living in Houston at the time and found out that Loyola had a weekend JD program.
Really?
Yeah. So instead of going full time, or instead of even what the more conventional night school options, what Loyola has is a weekend program where you go basically every other weekend during the semester, so like 7 weekends a semester. You're taking classes all Saturday and
in person,
and then at least half of Sunday, and then in between those weekends, you do some online work during the weeks, kind of on your own pace. And so that allowed me to continue working full time. I was still doing that disaster recovery work while doing my first year of law school.
You flew up here every other weekend?
I did.
To work your way through law school?
Yeah, for the first year. Then, I mean, I have quite a winding all over the place story. We didn't even That's talk fine. About. I lived in Indianapolis next for 2 years.
Okay.
While my wife went to school for nursing.
Okay.
And then for my last year of law school, I was finally local, living in the suburbs and only driving in to do those in-person classes.
So the 3 years of law school took you a journey till you finally, as a 3L, you were here full-time. That shows a lot of dedication and also shout out to you for making sure that your wife got an opportunity to do some advanced schooling as well at Indianapolis. For nursing, did you say?
Yeah.
Does she still do that?
Yeah, she does.
Oh, that's awesome stuff there. Okay, we're just starting to get to know you. So you work at Loyola, or excuse me, you get your law degree at Loyola. When do you start connecting with Vogelsang? Before you graduate or after you graduate?
Yeah, so when I went to move to this area from Indianapolis, and it was actually 4 years, because since it's part-time, it takes a little longer.
Right.
So I was in Indianapolis for 2 years. I was a paralegal there doing some insurance defense work. Definitely knew that wasn't for me, but, you know, something to fill the gap and give some experience during law school. But then when I was coming to move here, I started looking for opportunities and saw the posting for the law clerk position at Vogelsang Law. And so I went ahead and I applied, got the position, and I've been there ever since.
What attracted you to Vogelsang? What about it?
Well, especially as a law student, it was really one of the few opportunities I saw that did the plaintiff side work for a law student position.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are certainly some others out there, but I knew that's a side that I wanted to work on post-law school, and I'm not going to pretend I really knew much of anything about asbestos litigation going in, but
you knew you wanted to fight for the plaintiffs,
right?
You wanted to fight for the underdog,
exactly.
So you had that in there, and that obviously matches up perfectly with what Vogelsang Law does. So you, what'd you say? Is a clerk? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, a law clerk. So that's just, you know, what they generally call a law student who's working at a law firm, helping out,
doing some real work though.
Yeah, yeah.
Not just making copies.
Yeah, exactly. It was a really great experience. You know, it was a whole world of difference from the paralegal work I had done, which was very, you know, just reviewing some medical records and that kind of thing. I really got a lot of great opportunities from the lawyers at the firm to do real legal work and apply the skills that I was learning in law school, do real legal writing, real legal research, and get to make a substantial contribution to these real cases.
Yeah, to help real people,
right? Yeah.
Really in-depth stuff. Okay, so then now you worked there for a couple of years. Tell you what, why don't we just take a break now? We'll start chatting about the asbestos litigation that you're working on now. Again, this is Skylar Hughes. He is from Vogelsang Law. VogelsangLaw.com is where you can go for more information, and you can see Skylar's page right there. It says Voice for the Underdog. That's a good one, Skylar. Good picture there, too. Chatting with Skylar Hughes, an attorney at Vogelsang Law, a voice for the underdog. Skylar, I feel like that's you, but I feel like that's what you guys do as a whole at Vogelsang Law, right? I mean, you guys are fighting for people who have either gotten a tough diagnosis, family that have heard about Vogelsang and what you do, maybe you have someone that is unfortunately going through mesothelioma, and you're often the person that they talk to right at the beginning, right?
Yeah, you know, I think especially with mesothelioma diagnoses, people know that, at least with that disease, people are aware of it's linked to asbestos exposure. So
it's only caused by asbestos.
Exactly.
That we know of. I mean, that's a one-to-one direct link.
Exactly. Exactly. So they know at that point that they should be, and they absolutely should be looking at that point for an attorney, because there's such a clear link here. There is such clear liability, and often, and you really should be doing that immediately upon diagnosis with mesothelioma, because it is such a, frankly, brutal disease. Time is of the essence, because there is certain evidence and testimony and knowledge that only the person who was exposed will be able to provide. And if they are incapacitated or pass on quickly, then, you know, that opportunity to get that information is lost. And of course, we still work with cases when people have passed, because, you know, you can try to find coworkers and other sources of information. But the best person to talk to is the person who was exposed.
What a cruel disease. It goes fast, unfortunately, I think is what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And I imagine that as people get a diagnosis, you know, these are often hardworking people that were just making a living supporting their family. And I don't think that they're overly litigious people. I think that they, you know, they work hard and they want to just grieve with their family going through their diagnosis. But maybe the last thing they're thinking about is calling a lawyer. But unfortunately, what you're kind of saying is that has to be one of the first few things you're thinking about, is calling someone quickly.
Yeah, and of course people need time to yes. process what they're going through. But, you know, it is something that if you or your family member gets a diagnosis like this, that you do need to keep in mind, because, of course, we talk about in law, we talk about the statute of limitations. And, you know, usually that's about 2 years in most cases between when you get diagnosed or when somebody passes away. And that's your timeline in which you can bring a lawsuit. But there's this other timeline in these cases where it's while the person is still able to, you know, help their own case, which unfortunately is not always a long time. Now, we see a wide range of outcomes. You know, we see clients who are doing fine a year later or are sick but are still moving along. And then we see people who pass within months or even weeks of their diagnosis.
That's tough. I want to dive a little deeper into what the conversation is like, what things you're asking people about, you know, where they worked, perhaps years involved, just so people can get an idea before they call you maybe of what that conversation will look like. We'll do that, though, in a few minutes, chatting with Skylar Hughes. Text line, phone line open, 312-981-7200. Mesothelioma, obviously, is linked to asbestos. Do you live with someone, or perhaps you're dealing with someone with lung cancer as well, even if they're a smoker? Do they work around asbestos too? There is relief for those people as well in terms of litigation. And this is Let's Get Legal. We are powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. 2 o'clock hour, we'll check in down in Springfield about some legislation that is happening, stalled, or not happening at all. We'll do it all, a little roundup in the 2 o'clock hour. Also, we'll find out why Uber was charging all Chicagoans, I shouldn't say all Chicagoans, anyone that took a ride in a certain area at a certain time, more money than they should have been doing. The city ended up getting that money. So what happens next? Uber admits that they overcharged people. The city was given that money. And are they going to give it back? I don't know. Mac Lederman will join us from Block Club Chicago to talk a little bit about that. Skylar Hughes joins us now, continuing our chat about Vogel Zhang Law. He's an attorney there, been there for a couple years, the voice for the underdog on the bio, and really that's what the whole team at Vogel Zhang does. You serve victims of asbestos exposure, whether that's the form of mesothelioma, which is a direct one-to-one link to asbestos exposure, asbestosis, or lung cancer, which I know can be a little murkier, especially if you're a smoker. Some people think, well, there's no chance that I have of any litigation. No, you might. Talk to the folks at Vogel Zhang. If you are exposed to asbestos, you might very well still have a case. Skylar, as we move on here, you brought up a point during the news break that I want to make sure we remember. I think when people hear an attorney on, they're saying, hey, if you've been exposed to this, call me. I don't know if it's like the Camp Lejeune in people's minds that they're just going to be like lumped into some class action lawsuit. And I'm not disparaging class action lawsuits, but that's not what you guys do at Vogel Zhang, is it?
No, it's not. We do individual lawsuits, and it's really all about the individual person's exposure. The thing with class action lawsuits is they do have certain legal requirements. And a class action is where you have lots of people that meet a certain definition, that's what defines the class of people who have some sort of injury. And then you have one class representative, or maybe a few class representatives, that are the representative class member through that litigation. And there's some certain requirements, like there needs to be enough people, and obviously asbestos exposure meets that in the abstract. A lot of people were exposed, and you know, a lot of people might have been exposed to each type of product. But the key reason that it's not something that is done through class actions is because everybody's exposure is different. And in a class action, you have to have commonality, where the common issues of law have to predominate over the individual issues.
So that would be like they all worked in a similar place or a similar time that maybe rise to a class action lawsuit, or other things?
Well, you know, you were just mentioning a story about Uber overcharging. You know that now, I'll defer. I'm not a class action attorney.
Right.
I took a class in law school, but I'm not a practicing class action attorney.
Right.
But, you know, there might be an issue there where, okay, well, everybody who was overcharged for their Uber rides is during that time period is part of the class.
Kind of a controlled area time space.
Right, exactly. So they're all part of the class. And
we're not saying that's going to happen.
Right,
Uber,
we're not saying that's going to happen. And maybe it already is happening, or maybe this thing with the city of Chicago takes the place of that. But, you know, theoretically, they could all be a member of a class and get, you know, some small amount of compensation that adds up to a total that makes it worth the attorney bringing the class action.
Mm-hmm.
Asbestos is completely different.
Okay.
Because each person, even if they were exposed to the same product at a certain time, ultimately has a completely different exposure history. For example, you know, last year we had two big mesothelioma boilermaker cases that we were kind of litigating at the same time. But each of these boilermakers, you know, they have the same job title. They often worked with some of the same boilers or at some of the same job sites. But at the end of the day, they were there at different times doing different work around different other people doing work, and they had some different job sites as well and some different products as well that didn't overlap. So their whole totality of exposure is different, and so those cases are individual cases.
I think, and again, nothing against class action, and I think for some cases that just makes perfect sense, right? Handling a class action lawsuit, that's the best way to go about it. That's the most efficient way, most effective way to bring justice for people. Makes sense. I imagine, though, knowing if I'm someone who is dealing with mesothelioma or I've lost someone that is, knowing that I've got like a fighter for me and my family, I think makes a difference to people. Do you think so?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think people really appreciate the individual attention that they get and that it really matters what their personal case is and ultimately, you know, how their lawsuit turns out at the end of the day has to do with what they end up, when we work with them and what they put into it.
Yeah. I often think, correct me if I'm wrong, in fact, I know I am, that that when you like, it's plaintiff versus defendant, I've always imagined that the defendant in these cases is the boss or the employer who had asbestos on location, and that's what they were dealing with, and that's what they were exposed to. And maybe they are listed as one of the defendants. But Skylar, it's often a long list of folks that you guys see as at fault, right?
Right. And so a few things there. First of all, in many states, you can't really go directly after the employer necessarily because they are protected by workers' compensation laws. Mm. Where the only thing you can claim against them is workers' compensation rather than bringing a lawsuit against them.
Which is a whole other court system. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a whole other system. Now, in Illinois, that's not the case. Ever since 2019, the legislature made an amendment to the law that allows you to bring a case against employers for asbestos exposure against them for that injury that resulted from the asbestos exposure. But really, to the rest of your question, we're looking at the job sites they might have worked at that were not their employers. Like if they were an outside contractor going in, as many of the tradespeople were, they worked for an outside contractor, and then they would hop around from plant to plant, mill to mill, power plant to power plant, building to building, and do work on behalf of these contractors. And so, you know, then you can go after the job site. You know, there might be even some other contractors who are working with asbestos near you and not protecting you as a bystander. And of course, there are the products that were using asbestos.
If they're working with machinery that was laced with it or lined with it, you can go after the manufacturer of that.
Right, right. I mean, you've got these makers of, asbestos was used especially, not exclusively, but especially on any equipment involving heat. So, you know, if you've got like a boiler or furnace, very, very high chances that in that era, if you're, you know, it's from like 40s through the 70s at least, and you know, obviously beyond that time frame too, but it's going to have asbestos on it, insulating it.
And this is a good time of the show to remind people, yes, a lot of classrooms and workplaces had or have asbestos currently in them. This is the part where some people start to freak out. We're saying don't. Not that it's great that there's asbestos in those places, but there's certain things that have to happen to it to make it go into your lungs. That isn't just walking on top of it or being in the room. It's not a one-to-one link. In fact, most people that have probably been around asbestos or been exposed to it do not end up with mesothelioma. It's a minority of people that end up with it, probably a vast minority of people that end up with it. I just like to say that so we don't start getting texts and calls or people freaking out that maybe one exposure did them in. I mean, it might have, but most likely not.
Most likely not. I mean, you even have some studies of insulators who are the most heavily exposed profession out there because, again, asbestos was used as insulation. So the insulators would be tearing that stuff apart, exposed to billions and billions of asbestos fibers over their careers. You know, they have the highest exposures and they would have rates of, I believe it was 8 to 10% rates of mesothelioma. So it's still an incredibly rare cancer. Of course, those insulators probably, you know, more of them probably also got lung cancer, and a majority of them probably have some degree of severity of asbestosis. But point is, even the worst exposed people don't automatically get mesothelioma.
Exactly. That's a great point to bring up. 708 has a good question. My husband passed away 4 years ago due to lung cancer. We never even thought to look into asbestosis or asbestos exposure. Her question is about the statute of limitations. You mentioned, and so it's been 4 years since her husband passed. Is it from the passing of the person or when maybe the potential plaintiff has knowledge that it could have been caused by asbestos, right? Because is there any protection for people that, hey, we wouldn't have known that this could have been a possibility? That's maybe a difficult one to thread, but what are your thoughts?
Right. I mean, that's a really great question. And there is something, and I'm just going to talk generally here, you know, to the caller or the person who wrote in, they can definitely call us directly and we can assess an individual case. But generally speaking, the discovery does matter. Now, if you know, if you were told at some point, you know, at the diagnosis that it might have a link to asbestos, then you have 2 years from the day of diagnosis or 2 years from the date of death to bring a lawsuit. However, if you were never told, hey, you know, asbestos is linked to lung cancer, and your work history or your husband's work history could have, with asbestos, could have led to that, then your statute of limitations actually starts running under the discovery rule from that date of discovery. So if you're listening today and this is the first time that, you know, you're finding out that that somebody's cancer might be linked to asbestos, then technically speaking, it starts running today. Now, that said, you really should bring that case and reach out as soon as possible.
Yeah, the 708 followed up with, he had smoked for 5 or 6 years. We assume that what it was. Doctor never said anything, but he did work in the trades. My guess is he worked around asbestos. That'd be someone that should call, right?
That is somebody that should call.
Okay, exactly. VogelZangLaw.com. The number on the website is 312-466-1669. We'll find out if that's exactly the number you want people calling today. But VogelZangLaw.com is a great place to go. Vogel Zang Law in the studio with me today, Skylar Hughes. And we've gotten a couple of great text questions and thoughts. And we love your phone calls, too. 312-981-7200. Maybe you have just gotten a diagnosis, and it doesn't have to be just lung cancer or mesothelioma. We've had people call in the past, Skylar, about, like, what is it, plaque on the lungs?
They're called pleural plaques. And, you know, there can be other, like, pulmonary fibrosis is another diagnosis that people might get. These can, not always, because there can be other causes, but they can be related to asbestos exposure if somebody, like, worked in the trades and was exposed to asbestos. That could be related to a condition called asbestosis.
Okay.
So this is a scarring of the lungs caused usually really by the heavier exposures. I mean, you're not going to get this from a one-time exposure, but more from a repeated working with asbestos. But basically, the asbestos is getting in your lungs, and I mean, it's like inhaling a bunch of miniature needles, and it creates scar tissue in your lungs that builds up over time around those asbestos fibers.
Okay.
And so, you know, there is even a latency there because it takes time for that scar tissue to build up to the point where it starts to impact your breathing and your function. But yes, if somebody worked in the trades and, you know, they get some sort of lung issue diagnosis and they know they worked with asbestos, they should definitely reach out because
even if it's not a fatal diagnosis, I mean, they're still going to have quality of life issues that they spent years working for their retirement, and maybe they can't run around with their grandkids as much. Maybe they can't get up the stairs. I mean, there's a lot of issues with lungs that do affect you. Even if asbestosis is not mesothelioma in the fatalness of it, it still is a life detriment, and you're due justice.
Right. I mean, this really does impact people. I've talked with plaintiffs who just aren't able to do the things that they love. They aren't able to, you know, 1 year they have to stop riding their bike. A few years later, they have to stop taking long walks. They can't walk more than, you know, a quarter mile and then less. And then they have to stop mowing the lawn or gardening because of asbestosis. You know, it's not, there are some very, very severe cases where it can't even be fatal based on the restriction of breathing, but that's the most severe cases. But in most cases, you know, it's not going to be fatal, but it's going to severely impact somebody's quality of life, and that is absolutely an injury.
This is about the time when we get a text from someone saying, we sue people too often. Oh, so you can't ride your bike as much as you used to. Why do you deserve to get money for that? Well, let me paint that picture for people so you don't have to, Skylar. You worked your whole life doing something where a company knew or someone knew that you were around something dangerous, and either didn't take the precautions to protect you from it, didn't tell you that, and you now have a lesser quality of life. We only have money to give. That you can't give time back. You can't give picking up a grandkid back. You can't take can't give someone a long walk on a beach in any other way. This is the form that we have in the society, and this is how we not only get people what they deserve, but also provide a check on big companies that then have to not maybe have to go through litigation. We are trying to incentivize companies to have been honest in the first place. You kind of see what I'm getting at here, Skylar?
Oh, exactly. It's about holding companies accountable for their actions and setting that benchmark. So in the future, when there's the next, you know, asbestos, companies take pause before they keep on using something that's going to harm people. And unfortunately, we know that still happens, but, you know, then at least you can still, at the end of the day, hold them accountable.
Quick break in the action here at 153. Skylar, you notice how we're now living in a cloud here on the 18th floor? Did you see the cloud rolling here downtown? This is kind of cool. I don't know if it's raining Iridian or if this is just on the 18th floor of fog. I know this is a radio, so I'm not painting the best picture, but it's hard to see out of some of our windows right now, which is interesting. Hopefully it's sunny by you. We're chatting with Skylar Hughes from Vogel Zhang Law. This text from the 630. I just chuckle at it because everyone has someone like this in their lives, and this just goes to what we were talking about. Asbestos exposure does not equal immediate mesothelioma or a guaranteed mesothelioma diagnosis. From the 630, my grandfather, born in 1894, was a traveling asbestos salesman, which I didn't know that was a thing. Door-to-door asbestos, hello, knock on the door, I've got something for you. He smoked cigarettes like a chimney, but lived to the age of 92 and died of natural causes. Good for him. I don't think that's probably the majority of people that have done those two things. But, Skylar, I think that speaks to what we were saying earlier. No need for people to panic out there quite yet, right?
Right. Not, you know, everybody has different susceptibility to disease. You know, and I know previous people from my firm that have been guests on here have talked about how, you know, you can have somebody who's the insulator, the tradesperson who's working with the asbestos every day, who's fine, and then it's their wife who's doing their laundry who ends up getting mesothelioma, because maybe just for some reason, everybody's different, they were more susceptible to getting mesothelioma.
Well, this also comes up a lot in the talc cases with the baby powder. People freak out. They're like, I had baby powder on me every single day when I was a kid. So many of us have, but very few people have developed, or not, I don't want to say very few, but relatively speaking, are developing issues from there. Okay, so let's say someone is interested in calling you, reaching out to Vogel Zhang. What's that conversation like that you have with someone on quote-unquote intake?
Yeah, so once we, you know, we get an initial background to see if there's a potential case there, and then we'll go into a more extensive intake call where, you know, we'll spend a longer period of time, often myself and one of my colleagues will be going through basically somebody's work and life history, you know, starting from their childhood, what their parents did, in case Maybe one of their parents was in the trades. And then we go through their work history starting in high school. If they ever did any military service, we'll go through that. Because especially in the Navy, we'll see a lot of exposures on the ships where it was often used. We'll go through their whole work history, each job site they went through. And it's okay, you know, if you don't remember everything perfectly right. In that sense. We're just trying to get a sense of, okay.
You don't need every pay stub for your mm-hmm. entire life.
No. You do not need it, like all the documents or anything at the outset in mm-hmm. order to have a case by any means. But, you know, that gives us an idea of where to look. You know, we know that certain kinds of products are in certain kinds of places, and whether we need to be looking into, for example, automotive defendants. You know, we've talked a lot about the trades mm-hmm. and people working in factories and plants and steel mills, but you know, there's other stuff that had asbestos too. So for example, brakes had asbestos in them.
Mm-hmm.
Engine gaskets that were in cars had asbestos in them, because these are very high heat applications, and asbestos worked well with high heat. So you know, we see cases like that too, where, and in some cases it might be somebody who they worked in the plants and the mills, and then they also did their own brake jobs on the side. So right. Those are just the kind of things that we need to screen for at that intakes process.
Mesothelioma, obviously a link to asbestos. If someone out there is diagnosed with lung cancer, or they know someone that is, I would again either call you guys, talk through it, or at least start thinking about your employment history. Like you're saying, I imagine there's people out there that had exposure to asbestos, still have no idea that they've been exposed, are diagnosed with lung cancer. Maybe they smoked, maybe they didn't, and they're like, well, I'm just one of those unlucky people that got lung cancer. And maybe you are, mm-hmm. but maybe you were exposed to asbestos and you have no idea. I bet there's a lot of people like that, Skyler.
Yeah, and there are. And, you know, that's, if you have any question on that, we can give you an initial answer. We can evaluate your case. You know, there are cases where, you know, somebody calls in with a lung cancer diagnosis where, you know, maybe they don't end up having a case, at least one that we're able to bring.
But at least they know that then.
Right. But you can find that out for sure. And we can try to figure out if there's something that you might not have known was exposing you to asbestos from your career or even your personal work, that would support a case.
And this is why I think you guys do such a great job at this, and why Vogelzang is the place to call for this, is you have done so many of these cases. You have a list of all of the employers that maybe exposed you to asbestos, the things that did it. This isn't some firm where they haven't really ever done this before and they've got their training wheels on with asbestos. This is what Vogelzang Law does. You guys know it through and through. When someone calls you, I bet the third job they say, you're like, boom, that could have been it. I know that might have been the case. It doesn't mean you have a case or that you're going to win the case, but at least you can start getting answers immediately. Skyler, any other last thoughts you want to leave our listeners with before we wrap on up?
Well, I would just say, you know, I really hope
you could say no. You could say we covered it all. You did a great job, John. That's fine, too. Now you got something?
Yeah. You know, I think it's really important that we are able to bring these cases to get these compensation for these families and help them leave a legacy. And at the end of the day, hold these companies accountable for what they did. These companies knew about the hazards of asbestos. They used it anyway. They didn't warn people. And there is a reason that we bring these cases. There's a reason that you hear about asbestos cases. It's because there was a serious wrong done to these people that deserves justice.
Okay. Last important question. The Nationals, you're from D.C., weren't a team until 2005. So are you a Nationals fan? Are you an Orioles fan? Who's your favorite baseball team?
Very casual Nationals fan, okay. But you know, I've moved around so much.
Just say Cubs or Sox. Come on, Skyler. Yeah. That's what we really want to know. No, I won't make you pick a side. Skyler, it's good to talk to you. Good to meet you. Good work, and keep on fighting the good fight, okay?
All right, great to meet you. Thanks.
VogelZangLaw.com, VogelZangLaw.com.